So with that, I'll end the presentation. I will now open the floor to Q&A. No? Mike?
Thank you very much, Sir Jimmy. And now maybe we'd like to open the floor first for questions from our live audience. We'd like to request everyone to please state their name and their company for the benefit of our callers on the line. Thank you.
Any questions from the floor? Yes. Yes, please. Okay. Well, on the first question, I think we launched about 80 billion worth, no? rounded off, in terms of residential projects last year. On the second question on Ortigas, in terms of earnings. We have not yet recognized our earnings from Ortigas last year. We are still, regularizing our investment, which will happen this year.
Yes, Tina. Can we request you to please use the microphone? Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My question relates to the office for sale. What seems to be driving the demand for more offices for sale as opposed to leased, and seems to be very profitable EBIT margin or EBITDA margin is about 38%. You've, I think, realized like 7 billion in sales. So what's the plan for this particular segment in terms of your expansion? How much will that be of the total GLA of your office expansion?
Well, it is a very opportunistic market. I think the most of the buyers are, well, it's a combination of end users, those who are intending to use the space, which could be companies or individuals. We also have an investor market looking for yield for those offices that they can lease out. But I think by and large, most of the buyers are still end users, you know, looking for space. You know, and these are, well, the professional firms, some who are also expanding, not BPO related, but really more requiring office or headquarter offices. But this is, again, it's not something that is, we believe, a very permanent part of the business. So we were in that business before, as you know, prior to the Asian crisis. But it really depends on the demand situation. But for now, actually, we're seeing expansion. But we will try to take advantage of the opportunity. Depending on the actual demand take up, we can still allocate some of our land bank for that kind of a product line. The margins are good because these are very simple, I guess, structures, unlike residential where you have to fit them out completely. It's a relatively simple building, and therefore the margins are higher. But again, it's opportunistic. It's something that we are trying to maximize the potential right now, but at the same time, we are also conscious of the need to continue expanding our leasable space. So for our prime locations, which are the mixed-use areas, we reserve the office developments primarily for our, office buildings for lease, which the bulk of which are BPO buildings at the end of the day.
Just a follow-up. Sir, in terms of the product offering positioning, given the slowdown in the economy, like 5.8% GDP and the threat of the OFW remittance slowdown, where would be the product positioning in terms of the developmental residential? Would it be mostly on the high end or just maintain the current mix?
Well, we still believe that overall the residential market will remain very good, buoyant. I mean, the economy continues to grow. The middle class continues to increase. And the major drivers of the economy continue to be there, OFW, BPO, tourism potentially. And the macroeconomic drivers remain supportive of continued affordability in terms of interest rates and tenors and availability of financing. So we believe that growth in the residential segment will continue to be there, course, the pace of growth will probably be not as fast as what we've seen the last couple of years because of the high base effect, plus the fact that a lot more players have entered the field. But generally, we are still looking at all four segments continuing to grow. It's just a matter of identifying the right location and the right market by which we will launch our products, and making sure that we also will maintain the brand promise, which has continued to allow us to sell, in fact, higher than our competitors. And so it's still a very good market. But again, the growth will not be as fast. That's why if you look at our 2020-40 plan, a lot of the growth will also come from the recurring income side of the business, which we are aggressively expanding across the malls, offices, and hotels.
Mike, lastly, your plans for Cebu Holdings, Inc., you don't seem to be using it in a big way in terms of exploiting the opportunities in Cebu. Instead, you have this JV with SM in SRP. What's the plan for Cebu Holdings in terms of using it as your vehicle in expanding it? Or are you veering away from it being your vehicle?
In Cebu, we have a couple of entities that we actually use for our overall expansion in the Cebu market. Cebu Holdings is one of them, and they're primarily Ayala Center Cebu, that entire Cebu Business Park development. Where we still have lot pads that we are using, that we are developing on. And of course, Cebu Property Ventures, which is an IT park, Cebu IT park, which complements Cebu Business Park. And I guess other areas which are being done jointly between Ayala Land, Cebu Holdings, and Cebu Property Ventures. Now, the development model that we have adopted for Cebu is primarily to draw on the established expertise of our core businesses. Residential, as you know, we have 5 brands, and the top 4 brands are already in Cebu. And instead of reinventing the wheel and effectively building the capability within Cebu Holdings and CPVDC, we've actually just partnered with them. These brands effectively have partnered with Cebu Holdings and to a certain extent CPVDC to develop the land that they actually have. So it's they effectively serve as the landowner, the estate, and provide the land as well as contribute as well additional resources so that they can participate in the fruits, in harvesting the fruits of the development potential of these two major parcels. So that has been the model. So they have, of course, they also have their own leasing products like Cebu Holdings, Cebu Ayala Center Cebu, Cebu IT Park, similarly, CPVDC. But for the development side, they've actually partnered the other brands within Ayala Land so that we can maximize the opportunity without them having to, invest in the technology or build the brand or the people to actually run the organization. That has been the model. Now, the SRP lot is also, it's actually a joint venture. It's not just Ayala Land pursuing that. We share that with Cebu Holdings. We bidded collectively as a group, Ayala Land Group, with SM for that property. So it's still the Ayala Group, Ayala Land Group, with CHI, sometimes with CPVDC, also participating. So that has always been the model. Mm-hmm. Now, we partnered with SM because it's a big acquisition. We felt that it would be, from a resource optimization move and risk management move, we believe that it's makes a lot more, it's logical to actually partner with an SM who actually wanted the property as well. So instead of us competing and bidding aggressively against each other, we decided to just collaborate and jointly bid. And now we are jointly master planning the development so that we can also ensure that both of us, develop it the right way without having to compete head on.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Tina. Yes, Carlos.
Hi. Thanks for the briefing. I just wanted to ask on your OFW sales, can you give us an indication of what are the top three countries that are sources of these OFW sales? And these top three countries, how much do they account, how much of total OFW sales do they account for? And can you give us an idea if the buyer profile of the OFW sales component has changed as of recent?
Unfortunately, I don't have the specifics on where the countries, what the countries are, but I would say that Saudi Arabia still is the, probably the biggest of that. But it's, again, collectively, it's only 3% of our total sales. So it's not the bulk of our OF sales are generated from actually the Asia-Pacific region, no? Which accounts for, I think, about 40%. North America accounts for about 33%. So it's off the 25%, I think. No, that's how we are breaking it down. So it's still a small component. And in terms of buyer profile, they normally buy at the, at the entry level and affordable segments, no, between Amaya and Avida. And that market actually is much wider. It's not just dependent on the Middle East, but in other countries. So we believe that it will not be a major concern for us now, given that we have other markets, bigger markets that we serve, and also given the kind of product profile that we have, you know, which cuts across different income segments. So it's a much broader OF market.
All right. Then on your hotels, I noticed RevPAR is growing by 1% on a blended basis. But can you give us an idea if RevPAR is growing at a slower rate in Metro Manila versus the provinces? And would you say that in Metro Manila, maybe there's some pressure from maybe the amount of supply that's come on stream?
I'm sorry, can you repeat your question again?
As to your RevPAR growth for the hotels division, would you say that Manila, your Manila-based hotels have slower RevPAR growth in the province? And would you say that there may be some RevPAR growth pressure in Metro Manila given the amount of supply?
Yes, there's definitely more competition in Metro Manila now, particularly coming from the Bay Area. But Makati still remains to be a strong market for us. It still focuses on the business travelers as against the Bay Area, which actually attracts more of a casino market. So we're quite happy with our growth rate, except that, of course, because of supply, escalation rates are affected.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, CJ. Sorry, go ahead, sir.
My name is Ismael Booth from ICCTV. First of all, I'd like to congratulate the Real Land team for the excellent results last year. And my question is really relating more to the industry outlook of the real estate market. There are reports saying that the industry, real estate industry, is slowing down or even weakening. And you reported that the industry sales take up last year and slowed down by 13%. Although in contrast, the other land is still able to show growth of 6%. We've also seen reports that on residential completions, looking forward, 3-5 years forward, the supply is going down, which sometimes leads me to conclude that perhaps the slowdown in sales take up is because the developers have slowed down the project. Therefore, supply is declining. That's an explanation for the slowdown. I'd like to get a better understanding of the industry outlook as a whole, because that is a concern. Because if the industry outlook is really slowing down, and Ayala is an exception, it also is a major factor, in the performance. So it's more, how do you see the whole industry looking forward? Is there a real slowdown?
I think we have already seen some of those adjustments being made the last 2 years, no, by developers, no, including ourselves. Of course, it's not, that doesn't mean that the market is not there anymore. It's just that there are a lot more players who actually enter the field. The demand is still there. It's still growing with the population growth rate still increasing. income level still increasing. But of course, the supply side is the one that actually has expanded quite a bit the last couple of years. So we've seen some adjustments being made by developers in terms of launches, deferrals, or they're being more careful, which we believe is quite healthy for the industry in general and will make the industry much more sustainable, since there is effectively a discipline among the major players, at least, that they don't want to flood the market with too much inventory. But generally, the outlook is still positive. Of course, we will no longer see, at least in the next couple of years perhaps, the double-digit growth that we've seen during the last 5 years, because we were coming from a low base in 2009, 2010, and the industry was not as active, or there were fewer players. But the macroeconomic environment remains supportive of continued demand for the sector. It's just that the industry will have to adjust their plans and effectively to ensure that it is a much more sustainable market. What is good in the Philippine context is the fact that price increases have been very moderate, unlike in similar markets who are experiencing rapid growth. Generally, when there's rapid growth in demand and sales, it is accompanied by a massive increase in selling price. In the Philippine context, by some, I don't know, it was through an invisible hand to a certain extent, if you may, the industry has been much more disciplined and rational in terms of pricing. So we were only seeing inflation plus kind of pricing. It has made it affordable. They are very conscious about affordability because we're just starting. There's still the bulk of the buyers are still in the, lower middle income segment. So that's one thing that is also positive in the industry. But yes, it will be a slower growth moving forward. Last year, I think you're right that it's probably one of the reasons is because they have deliberately slowed down the launches, hence the sales have tapered. But again, it should be good for the overall industry. But overall prospects remain positive. That's why we continue to invest. And I'm sure that eventually, the market will continue to, especially if the Philippines sustains its momentum of growth, that should, fuel a lot more demand. And hopefully we'll, restart, increase the demand for these available units.
Thank you. Yes. Jomar.
Jomar Lacson at BPI Securities. First is actually you mentioned that there's moderated demand. I think the expectations are moderated demand. In terms of, would that apply more to the volume demand? And if that's the case, then what is the outlook for price adjustments for 2016? Do you think there's some room for actually any price upgrades for both the residential and even the office sales?
Well, in our case, we are still looking at moderate price increases. No? Again, just to make sure that although inflation is low, but we need to, compensate for that a little bit by price increases. But again, it will be very selective. It also depends on the location. Mm-hmm. Well, I can only speak for ourselves. I cannot speak for the industry. But as we have seen in the past, price increases have been implemented, but at a very moderate pace. Again, 3%, maybe 5% at most, generally. Except for, in our case, for the high ends, not now, but in the past, we've been able to actually price them even much more aggressively given the unique locations of our projects. But moving forward, as far as we're concerned, we still believe that we can still, achieve, moderate price increases. But again, it depends on the market.
Okay. So my second question is the funding cost. No? What's your outlook on your how to manage your cost of capital? Do you plan to go back to the capital markets for 2016 and stretch out, your maturities a bit? And what would be the impact of your cost of capital?
Well, Toti is here. So basically, we launched our 8 billion bond offering, effectively. We are now in the book building stage. A registration statement has been filed with the SEC. And this time around, we went for a shelf registration of 50 billion. That is good for 3 years. Hopefully, we'll get the approval. So that will allow us the flexibility, give us the flexibility to tap the capital markets at any point in time without having to, again, refile. So it gives us maximum flexibility to raise funds just in time, technically. Now, the 8 billion is, we're looking at it as a 10-year issue, so that we can still manage that maturity profile that I mentioned earlier. Rates will be slightly higher than before, of course. The blended rate that we have is a mix of old and new and short-term, long-term. But we still believe that rates are still attractive, no? For the tenor, especially the spread that we're able to get. Normally, we are able to take advantage of the of lower spreads relative to our peers. So we expect that to happen for the 8 billion. So generally, the blended cost will move up a little bit, but not by much. We'll probably still be, sub 5, no? Or around 5 blended cost of debt-wise by hopefully by the end of this year.
Okay. And my last question on the, it may have been presented earlier, but on the shopping malls, there's actually a surge in the fourth quarter. Can you just take us through what were the drivers, or I guess which malls were launched, I guess, in the fourth quarter? Or
I'm sorry, the launches?
No, there's a surge, I think, in shopping mall revenues in the fourth quarter. So which areas actually contributed to the
Yes. Well, we opened UP Town in the middle of last year, and clearly the revenues of that started to come in already towards the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So we were able to take advantage of that. And, well, generally also across all the malls, no, we also saw rental increases towards the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter is actually our best quarter traditionally. No, and so that's probably why it's showing a higher fourth quarter number compared to the third quarter.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Ron Rodrigo from Maybank.
Follow-up question on the mall. Given that you mentioned there's tremendous growth on the fourth quarter, on your slide 19, I just wanted to understand with regards to what's the difference on the same store sales growth and the same store rental growth, given that on the others, SSG are quite higher as compared to what you have reported. And then second question is with regards to the office. I think it's one of the highest performing in terms of revenue. Just wanted to understand if those are expansion or there are new players that are coming in.
The first question is on the malls. The second question is on offices.
Yes.
Can you say that again?
On the offices, I just wanted to understand, because given that in terms of the growth for last year, still one of the highest at 22%. Just wanted to understand if that's more of the new players coming in or expansion of the existing BPO locators.
Okay, maybe I can start with the second question. Last year, office revenues increased. And net increase because revenue because we opened a few office buildings now, but the net income is a higher growth number because of actually improvements in margins. So so it's a combination of new buildings and improvement in margins. That's where we're seeing a double digit growth in net for offices. Now for the malls, same store sales is actually a function of the store in comparison to its previous sales number. The same store, same mall number is a function of the total mall. No, so
did that answer?
Rental, yes, yes. So of the whole mall as against to select stores. I guess it's a function of vacancy, it's a function of moving around stores. So we track both numbers, but clearly both numbers indicate really the same sales figure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Any more questions?
Good afternoon. I actually have a number of questions, but mostly clarifications. On the launch number, Jimmy, you previously said 80 billion. I just want to clarify that includes office for sale already. Residential launches you mentioned earlier were 80 billion. I want to clarify that includes office for sale. And for this year, how much do you intend to launch, combined residential and office for sale?
I don't have the number with me right now, no? But I mean, we will launch not for the sake of launching. It will depend on the market take-up. So that's why we'd rather not give the number because it's very fluid depending on how we see the market.
Okay. With respect to your CapEx this time, I want to clarify if the Malaysian investment was in last year's CapEx or this year's CapEx?
Both.
Okay.
Well, because we still have... Well, we initially invested 9% in MCT Berhad, and we exercised our option in October. But I think the payment of that exercise is staggered. So there's still an amount due this year. In fact, we already paid it in January.
Okay.
So that's why that, it's a significant number.
And with respect to Ortigas, as of 2015, has the stake been paid for? Has the equity stake been paid for?
Well, it's, we're just regularizing. I mean, it's the way the investment will be booked. But
the cash has been paid, so it's part of last year's
CapEx. Well, it's been disbursed already.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just a clarification on the accounting side this time. With respect to the income statement you present today, is interest income accretion on receivables a revenue number or an interest income number?
Well, for the ones that present for analyst briefing purposes, I think we recast it to revenues because it's really real estate related.
Okay.
For statutory reporting, we report it under interest income because they want us to separate the interest component, the embedded interest component within. Technically, it's really, if you look at the sales contract, it's really just one number, which includes the embedded interest. That's why, so that we don't distort margin data, we actually include it in the, pro forma that we actually discuss during analyst briefing. But for statutory, they're classified under interest income.
Okay. And for the top three residential brands, so overall sales were up 4% for consolidated. Which one was the strong brand or the weak brand, if you can tell us? Did any of the brands contract, perhaps, on sales?
I think it's Alveo. Okay, let me see. Let me check. In terms of growth?
In terms of growth, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Got the take up. Check. Okay, in terms of growth relative to the amount posted the year before, I think that the strongest one was Avida, 9%. Growth relative to last year, to the previous year, followed by Alveo at 7%.
Thank
those
you.
Two.
Thanks, Carl. Maybe we can now open the floor for questions from our callers.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question from the telephone line, press star 1 on the telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash or the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. To cancel your request, please press the hash or the pound key. There are no questions from the telephone line, so please continue. Thank you.
Maybe we can entertain first Julian's question while waiting.
Hi, good afternoon. Congratulations on the results again. Just wanted to ask if you could share your, from your planning simulations, what have you identified, which particular factors have you identified that could potentially derail your long-term goals, your targets? And also, second question would be, in terms of capital management, I think there was a question posed earlier. Do you think your shares have gone low enough for it to make sense for you guys to buy back your shares? I understand you've levered up, but just wanted to get it straight from you guys. Thank you.
You know that I cannot answer the second question. So that's
can't
easy.
Blame a man for trying.
No answer, sorry.
<Yeah.
laughs> We're not in a position to actually determine that. I guess you're the ones who should determine that. But this first question, there are uncertainties out there, of course. It's really hard to pinpoint which one is the one. But of course, we try to manage all of them as best as we could. Of course, the risk of interest rates moving up and affecting the market is there. But we believe that in this current interest rate environment and what's happening with the rest of the world, the likelihood of interest rates spiking significantly to negatively affect the market is probably not there, given the current situation. Of course, unless a major shock in the system happens, no? But again, Philippines in relative terms is probably in a better position relative to its neighbors. Now, I guess the market risk there always in terms of the residential oversupply or supply-demand imbalances, for example. Price bubble probably not in this market, given the things that prices have not really appreciated that much, but supply-demand imbalances are already happening technically. So, and the industry is adjusting, including ourselves. So again, the risk there, we will just manage the risk proactively. We don't launch any SQL tower until we achieve cash break even. 70% was the norm. Maybe we'll increase that a little bit to be more conservative. Execution risk certainly is there in terms of completing the projects on time, especially on the leasing side and leasing the spaces, given that we are banking on growth coming from that sector as well to supplement the growth in residential. So those are among the risks that we are looking at. And we're actively managing to the extent that we can, given limited information. But we would like to think that we have already, the systems in place to be able to calibrate our plans should any of these key risks become major ones that will affect our performance. But for now, we are still optimistic. We still are quite positive with the prospects. I guess coming into the elections, of course, there will be some uncertainty, but we believe that after things are, after the election, provided it's a clean and honest elections, a clear mandate, we believe that things should continue because all the right variables are there, you know, all the right, moves have been made. I think that what is key is execution, not just for us, but even for the government. The infrastructure projects will do a lot to actually spur economic growth, not just in terms of decongesting or ensuring connectivity, but more importantly, the multiplier effects, no, that such massive spending will actually do to the economy, which should benefit all players, including ourselves.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I can add to that. No, well, lately there's been a lot of noise, right, in the financial markets, China, oil. No, but what we're seeing on the ground, no, things are still positive. On the mall side, there's still consumer spending happening. No, on the BPO side, I wish I could have more buildings actually available for our locators. We do our roadshows in the U.S. just to check on companies still moving into the Philippines, if they're being affected by talk of U.S. Congress trying to restrict movement of outsourcing to other countries. But we're not hearing any of those issues. No, U.S. companies still are continuing their outsourcing, and the favored spot is still the Philippines. And actually, if we have office space right now, it would be easy to lease this out. Now, on the hotel side, both business traveler and both leisure traveler actually still quite positive in January. So maybe they're not watching Wall Street. Anyway, I hope that helps. No.
It does. Thank you. If I may, one last question. You also mentioned earlier that there was some strength in Avida was one of the sources of strength in the residential segment. Could you add a little bit more color as to why a brand which is supposedly closer to what industry experts have mentioned as vulnerable to a slowdown, why you're seeing some strength in that particular segment?
Well, you cannot generalize the, the overall condition, plus especially if you have multiple projects happening at the same time. Sure. I guess I don't have the exact answer to that, but I think given that we are spread out across many geographies, certain projects being more attractive than others, I think that has led to some of these projects selling faster than before. It's also a matter of mix. No? It depends on whether we launch in a particular location, a new one. Normally there's a surge in terms of demand for a new area. So there's a lot of variables working. But, even if you take those externalities, I guess the numbers are still good, no? Despite, what we are seeing the rest of the industry and despite the fact that that's the sector where there's a lot more competition and supply. I think part of it is also the fact that we are now concentrating our projects in more of the tried and tested areas, the estates that we have, so that we do it in a mixed-use fashion. We no longer launch standalone projects for our condominium projects, so that to ensure that the success of the project, we do them in those estates which serve as magnets, given the fact that there are other uses in play, you know, like mall, office, or even hotel. So that's really the formula that we're trying to, implement. You know, and hopefully that is, the numbers seem to be working, supporting that kind of a strategy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julian. One last question from Tina Ulang. Yes.
Sir, you did, in terms of earnings growth, last year you did like 19% to 17.6 billion pesos. That seemed to raise the threshold in terms of the earnings improvement again for this year. And when I check the analyst expectations when it comes to your growth, I'm looking at a number that is about the same as last year, which is about 18%. Is it a realistic number that for analysts to expect that last year's results would be something that's replicable this year?
Again,
or it's too flattering to have that 19%?
Well, again, as you know, as a matter of policy, we don't effectively give earnings guidance. But if you look at our 2020 40 plan, the trajectory for us to achieve the 40 billion, we will have to achieve around 20% growth on average. But that's reckoned on 2013 was the base year, which was still a low year. No? So I guess, if you just work the numbers, I guess that's pretty much the kind of growth that we would like to achieve. For us to be able to hit the 40 billion target, no, by 2020.
Sir, on the unbooked revenues, are you able to share the split of that or the breakdown of that in terms of the high rise and the horizontal?
And most of it is high rise because the horizontal, side is quicker to recognize. No, normally it takes us 18 to 24 months. To complete the land development in a subdivision project from the time we start, we launch. No? So, but for verticals, at least 3 to 5 years, given the size, the complexity of the construction. No?
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I guess that ends our briefing for this afternoon. We'd like to thank, of course, Mr. Jimmy Ismael, Mr. Juni Halandoni, Mr. Bengzon, Ms. Angel Salvador for coming, and to everyone who attended today's briefing. Snacks will be served downstairs at Jollibee, so enjoy the rest of the afternoon. Thank you.